This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Coal industry dwindling? That myth blown up by German environmentalist Hefe Schuking. 18,000 years ago, methane shot up in a couple of decades. Rapid ice melt changed the rain, and an age of wildfire broke out. Is it happening again? We ask scientist Ben Riddle-Young from Ceres. To wrap it up, French economist Timothée Parquet says, slow down or perish. The slow way out. Welcome to Radio EcoShock. Thanks to the renewable energy revolution and climate worries, dirty coal is on its way out. Except that is not at all true. Yes, coal burning for electricity is slowly falling in the U.S. and the European Union. That is where most of us get our news. But the International Energy Agency reports globally more coal was shipped and burned in 2024 than ever before. And that will continue for years, wrecking Earth's climate, perhaps. We can track it. There is a global coal industry database. The global coal exit list is run by the German nonprofit called Urgewald. That was founded in 1992 by Goldman Environment Prize winner Hefe Schuking. Despite lofty promises by corporations and politicians, Urgewald warns us there is too much coal and too little exit. From Sassenberg, Germany, Hefe Schuking, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. Glad to be here again.
Your group worked intensively on European banks to get out of coal. In 2015, you got the Norwegian government pension fund out of major coal investments. The latest news on this side of the Atlantic is not so good. After the election of Donald Trump, the six largest American banks withdrew from the UN-backed Net Zero Banking Alliance. Five big Canadian banks did the same. Are you seeing climate backsliding in the European financial world as well?
No, thank God we're not. The trend in Europe is very clear. It's getting out of coal financing. And in this case, you have to remember that European banks are, just as U.S. banks, are global financiers. So this means, reflects not only that coal power is rapidly being reduced in the European Union, but it also reflects European banks no longer supporting coal companies in Indonesia, in Russia, in countries like South Africa that are heavily dependent on coal.
So coal is the dirtiest fuel. It yields the least energy for the most carbon pollution, not to mention that it's lethal to human lungs. Hefe, where do we get the idea that coal was losing out, that it was a sunset industry, even while coal was actually flourishing with record profits?
Well, I mean, in 2021 at the Glasgow Climate Summit, you know, all of the official language was about phasing out or phasing down coal. So at that moment, there really was the hope that finally we would move towards retiring the industry instead of expanding the industry. But what we see every year when we put together the new update of the global coal exit list is that the global coal plant fleet is still growing. That is what is really enormously worrying. I mean, if we go back to 2016, we had something like 1,910 gigawatts of coal-fired power capacity worldwide. Since the Paris Agreement was signed, we've added 216 gigawatt to that number. And 216 gigawatt, that's more than the entire operating coal plant fleet of the United States, which is has the world's third largest coal plant fleet. So we're still moving in the wrong direction. What has happened is because around 90 financial institutions, mostly European, have adopted policies that exclude any type of financing or insurance for companies that are still expanding their coal portfolio. We've seen that the pipeline of new projects has gotten smaller, but overall, what this means is the coal plant fleet is still growing, only slower than it was before. And what we really need is, of course, governments to act, but also financial institutions to act. I mean, the finance industry, it has a huge responsibility for what is or is not financed.
The International Energy Agency's new Coal 2020 report finds that coal prices are about 50% higher than the average around 2019. They point to the Ukraine war pushing gas prices higher as a factor. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, we do see that the Russia's invasion of Ukraine, that it had an impact. But, I mean, in our mind, what it really shows is you don't want to be dependent on foreign countries for your gas or for your coal. You should want to have energy systems that are independent of these geopolitical risks, and that means renewables. Renewables allow for real energy independence. They help us avoid climate impacts of our energy use, and they are in most places in the world already cheaper than fossil fuel alternatives. But what we do have is that in many places, the energy transition is being blocked by fossil fuel companies who have powerful influence on governments. And this is one of the reasons why Orgoval, why we work on finance, because financial institutions are also really critical players. And tomorrow's future is shaped by what financial institutions finance today.
We all see photos of vast arrays of solar panels covering hills and valleys in China. They do lead the world now in that. And yet, according to the IEA, China consumes 30% more coal than the rest of the world combined. Why do you think China is still heavily coal dependent?
I mean, partly this is already due to, like, the increased use of coal in China. It's partly actually due to the impacts of climate change, because in China, you had a situation in 2021 where there were heat waves, there was drought. Drought meant that a lot of the large dams that China also relies on weren't able to produce the expected amount of energy. And due to the heat waves, you had a much higher energy use because air conditioning systems kicking in, and it's like a vicious circle almost.
It is. It's like a feedback loop where you need more energy because of climate change, and your energy source, if it's coal, is going to create more climate change. I was wondering, are Western-funded banks or international agencies helping to bankroll Chinese coal building, or is it completely internal? Do we know?
It's not completely internal, although for Chinese companies, I mean, certainly Chinese financial institutions are the most important source of support. It depends on the individual company profile, though. You do have Chinese companies that also have publicly listed subsidiaries that they use to collect money on the international capital markets. And so you find, if you look in, I don't know, the portfolio of, for example, BlackRock or Vanguard in the United States, you will also find, investments in Chinese companies that are part of the coal problem.
And despite climate pledges, Australia just approved three big coal mine expansions in 2024. Are they on your group's coal radar?
Very much so. And I mean, Orgoval, we work closely with NGOs all over the world, and especially in Australia, there's a really wide coalition of over 50 environment organizations that have warned that these coal mines are not only will harm our climate, but are a real danger for the koala. I mean, one of Australia's sort of iconic animals, and that koala populations in Australia are already, if one thinks back to the horrible wildfires, are under incredible pressure. And then developing new coal mines in areas of key koala habitat, of course, even worsens the situation.
And there's more bad news from here in Canada. The Premier of Alberta loves the tar sands, we all know that. But now Alberta has approved coal mining in a picturesque slope of the Rocky Mountains, just great big gouges into the mountains. That will put Canada back into the black carbon business. Australian companies are involved. Have you heard about that one?
I haven't heard about this specific project, but, you know, at Orgovault, we don't only do this industry research where we look at the global coal industry. We also do financial research to see which are the financial institutions who are investing or financing the coal industry. And last year, we did especially interesting research called Still Banking on Coal, where we went back all the way to 2016, the year after the Paris Climate Agreement was signed, and to compare banks lending volumes to the coal industry in 2023 and in 2016. And what we see is that the Canadian banks have actually increased their support for the coal industry. You have banks like Toronto Dominion that channeled 90% more money to the coal industry in 2023 than they did in 2016. And overall, Canada is one of the countries where Canadian banks, this is sort of crazy, you know. You have the Glasgow Climate Summit basically clearly saying coal needs to be phased out and financial institutions have a responsibility. And Canadian banks, who are also a member of the Net Zero Banking Alliance, actually, most of them went ahead and increased their support for the coal industry.
Oh, those nice Canadians, yeah. So about the Orgovault October report, you said, quote, over the past year alone, global coal-fired capacity grew by 30 gigawatts, a net increase that is larger than Poland's entire coal fleet, and Poland's known to be a coal-burning country. China is the big player in all this, as we discussed, but talk to us about coal in India.
India is the country where the largest coal mining expansion projects are planned. And at the same time, India is, after China, the country where the most new coal plant capacity is planned. And at the same time, I mean, you know, when we're talking about coal, we are not only talking about climate, we're actually talking about incredibly damaging impacts on people's health, on the overall ecology, on water quality. I mean, there was a really shocking study that came out last year that took account of which are the world's most polluted cities. And this report found, this is from the Center for Financial Accountability, the report found that out of the world's 100 most polluted cities, 83 are in India. And this is largely due to India's coal industry.
Yes, I was just looking at a map of global heating for 2024, and one of the few countries to be a bit cooler is India. And it's almost entirely due to the pollution layer that's shielding them from the sun. And these are sad times. I love India. I've been there, and I just hope that they can get back to their clean air and alternative energy eventually. Now, your group maintains the Global Coal Exit List, and it's a public database, 1,500 companies, more than that, in the coal industry. Like the oil industry, it seems like the coal people are always announcing more and more and more projects. And I wonder what would happen if they actually go ahead and build all this stuff, if they build it out the way they've announced. What happens to the emissions and to the industry?
Well, I mean, coal is already the most important agent of climate change. And if all of the new capacity gets built and all of those new coal mines are developed, you can be sure that 1.5 degrees is lost, and even 2 degrees it will no longer be a possibility. That's why it is so important to, we have very little time left to to change course. And if one looks at sort of the projections of the International Energy Agency, then their reckoning is that if we want to keep 1.5 degrees within reach, we have to exit coal by 2040 worldwide. And exiting coal by 2040 means that actually we would have to be retiring, just on average, every year, 126 gigawatts of coal-fired capacity. And last year, only 21 gigawatts of coal-fired capacity was retired. We're completely on the wrong track.
Are we building them faster than we are retiring them, do you think?
Yes.
Wow. You know, when I heard that the world burned a record high of 8.7 billion tons this past year, it made me want to call the climate suicide hotline in a way. I mean, could coal be the accelerator that pushes climate into a catastrophe for humans and wildlife? That all sounds very alarmist, but I think it may be true.
Yeah, that's why we all have to double and triple and quadruple our efforts. I mean, at the same time, you know, you can, it's really easy to get despondent and depressed, but ever since we began producing the global coal exit list, and this is not just us, this is many, many groups around the world and institutions who are working with our data, we can see that many hundreds of coal-fired power plants and plant coal mines were canceled. They never got built. And we see now that there are 90 financial institutions worldwide, really major financial institutions. I'm thinking of big insurance companies like Allianz or Munich Re or AXA in France or Generali in Italy that have pulled out their support, that refuse to insure any new coal projects. If new big infrastructure projects like coal plants or coal mines, if they don't have insurance, then they have real, real trouble getting financing. And I see more and more institutions that realize that continuing to finance coal, at the end of the day, it also means that you're wrecking societies and you're wrecking the financial system as such. All of those pension funds who are invested in coal, but also maybe 2% of their investments are in coal and the rest is in other things. The 98% of their non-coal investments, they could be threatened by these investments in coal. And I mean, we see it now with, you know, the wildfires in California and just what kind of damage happens with the changing climate and what the challenges are. And any investments in real estate in California,
Well, yes, and in Florida after Hurricane Helene, the whole U.S. Property market is a little bit at risk, and people are saying, well, if you can't insure properties, then you can't get a bank mortgage, and so this all blows back onto the banks once again. Sooner or later, those balance sheets have to look pretty bad, but on the other hand, part of the financing we need is for someone to come to developing countries and say, well, coal is the most expensive way you can go. Here's some really cheap financing for the solar and the wind that's really going to work for you and the battery power. Are we seeing that?
All over the world, you see there's competition. Like when it comes to, I mean, there are power needs that need to be met, and there's basically competition between renewable projects and coal or gas-fired power projects. And in places where there's a competitive energy market, renewables often wins out simply because it's the cheaper alternative. But we don't have competitive energy markets all over the world. And in some countries like Indonesia, for example, where basically you have a state-owned utility that contracts or is a gatekeeper for which projects get built, and you have a government where you have representatives that some of them own coal mines or heavily have close connections to the coal industry, where that kind of setup then stops which should be the energy transition and which would provide more energy and cheaper energy for people.
Yeah, it sure would help if media and social media kept bringing up coal as much as the politics or the lives of famous people. And I know the continuing life of coal is partly media silence and abdication, in my opinion. Are Europeans comfortable thinking they are safer because Germany and the UK are cutting coal burning? Do you think Europeans in general are aware that you are reporting that coal is expanding, not shrinking?
I mean, the world is global, right? The climate is global. What happens in one place affects us all. So I would, people who realize that the climate change is real, it's very, very threatening. It's threatening now what's happening in the U.S. with the rollback to the Trump administration and moving out of the Paris Agreement at a time when really collective efforts are needed to rein in climate change. And it's frightening also to see how governments and decision makers are really failing to take leadership and to do what is needed. I mean, when I look at future generations, they will look back at the 2020s and they'll say, we just don't get it. The writing was on the wall. Everybody knew this was the wrong direction. It was all clear. Why did they keep on permitting new coal plants? Why did they keep on financing new coal mines?
Because we're a little bit crazy, I think. You know, I helped Greenpeace tackle oil and oil consumption back in the late 1980s. That's when I got going. And I think you became an activist right out of university around that time. How do you keep going?
I focus on finding the most impactful thing that I can do. I mean, even if we end up losing 1.5, every tenth of a degree matters, right? And I can see that what Orgovald is doing and what NGOs all over the world are doing, what communities who are fighting new fossil fuel projects, we can see that we look at this data every year. We can see it's having a real impact. But we need to find ways to scale up our impact. What keeps you going?
Well, I do have a grandson, which a lot of people have that as a motivation, including James Hansen, is our descendants. But also, having traveled, I just have a feeling about people, and I like people, and I love people, and I don't want to see them suffer unnecessarily. And I think maybe I could just, I just have to keep going.
Yeah, that's a really good answer. I like that.
In the fog of the fast changes in disinformation, I find it gets harder to see what needs doing next. What is in the future for Orgovald and maybe even environmental action in Germany?
I mean, for us, there's a big difference between the coal and the oil and the gas problem. Like, in our conversations, and this is one of the things that gives me hope, with many Asian financial institutions also, we can see that there's a kind of understanding that coal, in some way, it's an end game. Like, the changes are not happening fast enough, but we can see that there's a realization that this can't go on, and that there's now, like, a critical mass of financial institutions who really are moving in the right direction. Even if the majority is not, it's a large group that is doing the right thing, and we're beginning to see, like, just in December, the Korean National Pension Fund, they adopt a coal exclusion. It's weaker than what we would like, but you see the steps in the right direction. With oil and gas, it's a completely different issue. We see the industry still expanding at a really high rate, and there's not yet really a consciousness among financial institutions. Many of them, you know, you talk to them and they say, oh, but Total Energies, one of Europe's largest oil and gas companies, they're transitioning, aren't they? And you also have a much more powerful industry, actually, than the coal industry. And I mean, right now in Europe, for example, in so-called sustainability funds or green funds, you'll find that many of these funds actually still include oil and gas companies. And that's really frightening. If even the green money is still supporting a fossil build-out. So that's, I mean, when you're asking what's in the future, this is one of the sort of immediate things we want to focus on over the next year, is getting all fossil fuel companies out of green and sustainable funds in Europe. And these make up, like in contrast to the U.S., green and sustainable funds make up a significant portion of the, it's around 20% of overall funds in Europe.
From Sassenberg, Germany, we've been speaking with prize-winning environmentalist Eva Schöking. She is founder and co-manager of NGO Ergowald, and you can find links to learn a lot more in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org, including links to ergowald.org and the Global Coal Exit List, or you can just go to coalexit.org. Eva, thank you for all your work and for spending time with our listeners again.
Thank you, Alex.
For Radio EcoShock, I'm Alex Smith.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
About 18,000 years ago, icebergs flooded the North Atlantic and humans sheltered from the cold in caves. Scientists called it the H1 Heinrich event. Until now, we did not know the great land forests also burned then, like an age of fire, increasing methane in the atmosphere. As melting Greenland pours fresh water into the sea, as record fires burn the landscape, and methane is climbing, could it happen again? Cool new science reveals more about this abrupt climate change in Earth's recent past, and you can't guess how they did it. The paper published in Nature January 1, 2025 is called Abrupt Changes in Biomass Burning During the Last Glacial Period. The lead author and innovator is Dr. Ben Riddle Young. He is a postdoctoral scholar at CERES, the Cooperative Institute for Research in Environmental Studies, that is located at the University of Colorado Boulder. He is also associated with the Global Monitoring Laboratory at NOAA. Ben defended his thesis at Oregon State University in 2023, and one of his chapters was immediately published in Nature Geoscience. From CERES, Ben Riddle Young, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi there, thanks for having me.
There's a growing concern about a failing Gulf Stream known to science as AMOC. A weakening AMOC would cool the United Kingdom and Scandinavia, even as the rest of the world warms. Ice melt is a definite factor. Your new paper may be a window into abrupt climate change. But before we go there, help us understand what happened almost 18,000 years ago. Ben, what is a Heinrich event?
Yeah, so I guess to start, this event, there was one that happened, about 17,000 years ago, and there were five of these events that occurred throughout the last glacial period. And essentially what happens is you have, during these already cold periods in the Northern Hemisphere, you have these big releases of icebergs into the North Atlantic that then when they melt, they essentially reduce the density of the surface of the Atlantic Ocean, and then that slows these overturning ocean currents that you mentioned at the beginning that today bring a bunch of warmth and heat to the Northern Hemisphere in Europe.
And as I understand it, to find out what happened to the atmosphere during these times, your team examined an amazingly deep ice core at the other end of the Earth. Now, you had a lot of help. You had a great team, including someone from the British Antarctic Survey and so on. What did happen then? How can you draw out an ice core 2 miles long without damaging the thin annual layers and bubbles inside?
Yeah, so one of the big advantages of this study was that we were able to use this core called Waste Divide Ice Core. It was drilled about 10 years ago by a huge team of scientists from the U.S. and other international collaborators. And basically, there's already been a ton of science done on this core, so we were able to know exactly where to look in the core to find the short, abrupt climate events that we were looking for, because it had already been dated by these other studies and stuff. So that was really helpful. It's kind of one of the best high-resolution ice cores that we have of the last glacial period, and that's because the accumulation rate in that part of Antarctica is really high, so you basically get a lot of snow, which eventually turns into ice for each individual year. So that allowed us to sort of see these very abrupt multi-decadal events that in other ice cores might have been like washed out.
We will be right back with more from Dr. Ben Riddle-Young on the last abrupt climate change.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
We return to Dr. Ben Riddle-Young on the last rapid climate change and